Today on CityCast Houston, the attack on Harris County from state officials continues. Plus, Houston and Dallas are at the center of an international meeting that could potentially get a long-awaited project moving forward. And it's Art Car Weekend. Pulitzer Prize finalist Evan Mintz is joining me to recap those stories and more. It's Friday, April 12th. I'm Rico Ramzanelli, and here's what Houston's talking about. Evan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How was your solar eclipse Monday?
It was cloudy.
Yeah.
Mostly. It was mostly cloudy. And it had me just looking at pictures I'd taken of me looking at past solar eclipses because it just wasn't there for me.
Yeah, it was cloudy. It didn't work out for a lot of people, but it was still an experience. I headed up to San Antonio on Sunday. Then we drove to Johnson City off of 281 on Monday morning. And I was anticipating traffic and it was going to be stressful. But let me tell you, if you go 281 instead of I-10, that was the best thing I've ever done because it was easy, no traffic. The people were so nice in Johnson City. The turnout was empty is the best way to put it. I thought it was going to be packed and we had a great time. And let me tell you, it lived up to the hype. It was cloudy and it started getting dark around 1:30. And then it's a little bit darker. And then right on the dot at 1:33, Evan, it was pitch black. It was a surreal experience. And I'm so glad I made the drive. It was worth driving up to San Antonio and driving another hour to Johnson City. It was a blast. My daughter loved it. My brother joined me. His wife joined me. My uncle was there with me. My aunt, everybody. It was just a blast. And it was a lifelong memory for sure.
That's incredible. I was scared away reading about all the traffic that was supposed to happen and people flying in from around the world.
Yeah.
And now I'm hearing from folks like you that actually wasn't too bad. Now I feel like I should have gone over because even, you know, if there's cloud cover, when you get that totality, it goes from day to night.
Yeah. In fact, it was even better with the clouds, in my opinion, because it was so eerie and so dark. And I also learned that the moon is made out of gas, a la Sheila Jackson Lee. Can I get your thoughts on this controversy? If people haven't heard by now, Sheila Jackson Lee was at a community event and she said the moon was made out of gas. She misspoke. I don't mind that. But to keep it equal, look, I call out both sides. I didn't like the fact that afterwards, Sheila Jackson Lee was blaming the Republicans on focusing on stupid things. To me, you know what? Just own up to it. You messed up. And move on. It doesn't have to be a Republican-Democrat thing.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, she's stuck her foot in her mouth on space things before. She's asked if Mars probes could, like, turn the camera to look at the flag we put in Mars. There's no flag in Mars. I feel like this is a comms staffer mistake. Like, they should have prepped her ahead of time. And even after she has the flubbed line, they should put out a press release saying, "We apologize. The Congresswoman misspoke. Everybody knows the moon is made out of cheese."
Boom. There you go. Have a little fun with it instead of turning it into another political side versus side thing. Can we just move on? But I wanted to bring that up just to keep it, you know, a little fair. I want to call out both sides on stupid things because I just like, come on. I don't mind the misspeaking. That happens. But the Republican-Democrat thing, come on. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get to our biggest story. What do you got?
Well, speaking of Democrats versus Republicans, Attorney General Ken Paxton is suing Harris County over our Universal Basic Income Program, also known as Uplift Harris. Now, the program, which is funded through federal COVID dollars, about $20 million, will give $500 a month to a little less than 2,000 Harris County families for a year and a half. This is targeted specifically at some of the poorest families in Harris County, below the poverty line, in the poorest zip codes. But Paxton is claiming that the whole program violates the state constitution, which says that no local government can lend its credit or grant public money or thing of value to individuals. But if you read the filing, it doesn't read like a legal text. It reads like a MAGA rant. And it really gives away the game of what Paxton is doing here, which is picking on Harris County. It happens all the time, particularly if you look back. Austin had a program like this. San Antonio had a program like this. El Paso had a program like this. And they never got attacked by the state. But Harris County tries it. And suddenly there's outrage because they don't like us. Republicans, for whatever reason, love picking on Houston. I mean, remember when they didn't give us the federal flood dollars after Hurricane Harvey? Remember when Ted Cruz ran away during Uri? I mean, remember when they tried to pass some state laws simply to override Harris County's bail practices? Let us be. Come on.
Yeah, that was one of those things where I was waiting for it. I couldn't believe nothing was said by them up until now, right when the funds were about to start going out to the families that needed the most. We've talked a lot about Uplift Harris on this program, and I think we're all on the side of like, this is a good thing. Let's try it out. Let's see how this is going to work, if this can help these families, right? But it took them this long. That was shocking. I thought this was going to happen when the program was first introduced.
I mean, I think they do it this way because it's the most disruptive. It's just about to start, and now they've got to throw the whole thing through the ringer. And one of the things I really like about the program is that funds are set aside to do third-party research to see what the effect of this type of universal basic income is. Because if it turns out this is a really effective program, a way to get people on their feet, help them climb the economic ladder, then it can save money in the long run for taxpayers by keeping folks out of the criminal justice system, making them rely less on other programs. And you'd think everyone would like that. You know, states are supposed to be the laboratories of democracy, cities more so. Let us experiment. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
One of the things the AG said was that taxpayer money must be spent lawfully and used to advance the public interest. One of the things that stand out to me is who's going to pay all the legal bills when it comes to this, right? Because it's going to go through the courts, it's going to go through a whole process. Who's going to foot that bill?
I mean, obviously, it's all taxpayers. And helping the poor, lifting up poor families, seems like a pretty, you know, worthwhile use. It seems like something aimed at public interest. And it's not as if we don't give away taxpayer dollars in Texas. The 313 tax credit program for businesses is just a pipeline of cash to big corporations. Like, they get that. But if you're a poor family, well, sorry, that's illegal. We can't give you any money.
Yep, that money is only set aside for other people, not you people. That's basically what the AG is saying. Just unbelievable stuff. And I did like that Lena Hidalgo countered and was not shy about what she wanted to say about the AG and basically called out his unethical practices.
I mean, you've got a guy up there who has been charged with so many crimes, who seems to be constantly getting engaged in these big partisan fights rather than focusing on the state. It really is absurd. And I see Republicans who are pissed off at Paxton, too, because he is not helping out reporters, whether you're left, right, center, whatever, just try to get their open records filings. They are stonewalling reporters trying to figure out what the government is up to. And instead of opening the door, instead of standing up for transparency, we got Paxton getting in fights with other politicians. I don't think this helps anyone.
All right, Evan, I'm going to get to my biggest story of the week. NerdWallet did a new study examining home insurance rates, and Texas was the most expensive state for home insurance, coming in at over $4,400 for a $300 dwelling. Now, the national average is about $1,900. In Houston, the average annual cost of insurance coverage is over $6,600 per NerdWallet. Now, the rates sound kind of wonky, right? So they looked at a home that was about 40 years old. And again, the dwelling cost about $300,000. I haven't met anybody with these kind of insurance rates, like $6,600 in Houston. That's a little too high, okay? They called all the insurance companies. They did their research. I'm not doubting the research. I've never met anybody with that. But rates have been going up and it is getting expensive. And there is an insurance crisis happening in California. A lot of companies are pulling out. Locally, I've talked about it here on the podcast. I know when I was renewing my home insurance for my old home, a lot of the companies that I've used before, they have pulled out of the area. So there is crises happening across in other states. And the reason I'm bringing this story is, look, the rates are going up. What can be done? Because are we going to be next? Are insurance companies going to pull out of Houston at alarming rates? And that's going to leave us with basically one option of just paying that high premium.
You know, I think there's two things going on. One is that we really haven't invested in the infrastructure we need to protect our city from floods and other natural disasters. I'm going to throw out build the Ike Dike, but also there's basic neighborhood infrastructure that we just haven't built. And there's no big political reward for doing the boring business of sewers and drainage facilities and upkeep. Like, no one gets rewarded for that. And we need to put more emphasis to get our elected officials to do those things. But also, as the cost of housing goes up, and also the cost of automobiles goes up too, you see your insurance, homeowners insurance, and automotive insurance going up with it. If we wanted to lower these rates, a thing we could do is just make housing less expensive, makes cars less expensive. And how do we do that? Well, you can remove tariffs on the imports to certain products that are being used to build homes and cars. We can just tear down the regulatory barriers that make it harder to build homes. We can just get more homes out there, let supply meet demand, and generally try to use everything that we've got in our policy pocket to say, what can we do to lower the cost of housing?
And by the way, a lot of people might be wondering, like, why are these rates going up? You mentioned a lot of things. I've mentioned that a lot of companies are pulling out. But one of the main reasons, climate change is intensifying weather events, including wildfires and storms. So that could be another big factor in all of this. So I just saw this and was like, man, everything is going up. And now that there's numbers out there, just truly shows you how expensive things have gotten here recently. Houston's original neighborhood downtown is for everyone, and it's poppin'. It's our open-hearted home for our biggest celebrations and our treasured hidden gems. From the world-class theater district to incredible green spaces like Discovery Green, downtown is the place to be. In fact, more people visited downtown Houston last year than the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio combined. There's no better time to live downtown than now. From starter apartments to luxury lofts, everyone can take advantage of the arts, business, culture, entertainment, food, and recreation. Now, you might think of downtown as only the heartbeat of Houston's regional economy, which it is, but there's so much more to it, including free events throughout the week with Downtown Houston Plus. From the Market Square Park Farmers Market every Saturday to Yoga Flow every Wednesday, you can find something to do and eat and watch in downtown Houston. Learn more at downtownhouston.org. Downtown Houston, get energized and revived. Evan, let's get to our most overlooked story. What do you got for me?
The most overlooked story, I think, is a fight going on in Midtown right now over a new homeless housing project next to a Beyonce-backed complex. Now, what's specifically happening? The Bread of Life, which is a nonprofit that's worked with Beyonce's Bae Good and Tina Knowles Lawson, wants to build a 14-story apartment building in Midtown to provide housing for the formerly homeless. And to do so, this nonprofit is asking the city for permission to build closer to the street than the mandatory 25-foot setback from the property line. And I think that's good. Setback requirements are dumb. It's an unnecessary regulation. You can build closer than 25 feet. It will be fine. And frankly, we need more housing for the homeless in this city. But nearby landowners are freaking out. They don't want this, and they're arguing that the setback is necessary for making the region pro-pedestrian, to make it walkable in Midtown. And I've got to say, that makes zero sense. You don't need a 25-foot setback to have something be walkable. What you need are sidewalks, and what do you know? This plan, if they build the building, is going to have some very nice sidewalks on it. It's also going to have an interesting overhang where the first floor is going to set back more than the floors above it, so you get some nice shade there, which is something you could use in Houston if you want to make it more walkable. Now, overall, the city is trying to grapple with the fact that we are not as affordable as we used to be. We do better with homelessness than other major cities, but not as good as we'd like to be. And if you can't do something as basic as build this building because of the setback requirements, then we are totally screwed. The Planning Commission is going to be voting on a variance to allow them to move forward on April 18th. And I think the city just needs to get out of the way. This whole project is a microcosm for the struggles that we are facing when it comes to housing affordability.
Is there something else at play here, Evan? Because if the plans have nice sidewalks, they have the shade, and everything is taken care of, why are people fighting back? What are we doing here?
I mean, let's be straightforward. They don't want to have homeless housing in their neighborhood. But people have got to live somewhere. If you don't want to see folks in tents, if you don't want to see them on the street, you got to provide housing. And this is a plan to do that. It really is this problem of people saying, oh, I want to tackle this issue. Like, oh, do you want the solution? No, I don't like the solution. I just want the problem to go away.
I want to talk about the solution. I just don't want it to be here near me, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and this seems like the perfect place to build it. It's near transit, it's in a central location, it's next to an already existing structure to provide housing for people. But the funny thing is that already existing building, known as the Knowles Rowland House, is going to be growing as well. They're going to be putting up a 33-unit building there, and it has a setback of less than 25 feet. But because it already exists, they don't have to get a variance to keep expanding it. But if you want to do something new, you've got to go to the city for permission.
Okay, Evan, I'm going to get to my most overlooked story. And we don't get to talk about national politics and President Joe Biden here on the show as much, but it's time to talk about it because Houston and Dallas are in the news as President Biden met with Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida about the Texas high-speed rail. Yes, the mythical, the legendary high-speed rail between Dallas and Houston that was supposed to connect us and make the train ride 90 minutes has had different issues like different backers, different companies, and it has just stalled out since 2014. But President Biden is talking to Japan about this awesome, awesome high-speed bullet train that's supposed to connect us. Is this finally going to be the way that we get this done? Because I need this train done like now.
Seriously, this thing has been like a zombie project. It was alive, it's dead, now it's back. And I'm glad it's back. The original concept was that, well, you know, in the 2000s, interest rates were incredibly low. Like, well, what can you invest in? How about you build a whole train thing that private backers can invest in and they're going to make money off of it? Like, well, interest rates are higher now. Maybe it's not such a smart investment, but there's still demand there. I mean, look at how much money TxDOT is spending to expand I-45. Like, maybe we need some alternative methods of transportation. Now, I see folks freaking out about this saying, oh, taxpayer dollars are going to be spent. Taxpayer dollars get spent on a lot of things.
Yeah.
At least we get a train out of this one.
Yeah, taxpayer dollars. Like, what? Who's tracking that, by the way? When they say that, are they actually looking at like, oh, I can't believe it was spent on this and not that? Stop. You're just saying that. That's just an excuse. Let's get this done, all right? Because I need an option. I don't want to fly to Dallas. I'm tired of driving to Dallas. I need that 90-minute bullet train and boom, we're on. And it also makes for a good movie, right? There's always good movies on bullet trains for whatever reason. A train ride, 90 minutes, the perfect amount for a good movie. So we need to get this done. And I'm glad that it is getting the focus of President Joe Biden. And I love this. Hopefully, this is the reason it gets done, but still a lot to do. I mean, they haven't even broken ground on anything yet. So it's going to be a long, long time. Hopefully, it gets started at least.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's get that Japanese high-speed rail technology right here in Texas. My one complaint, the one thing wrong with it, is that the station in Houston is going to be like north of the Galleria area. It's going to be like the old Northwest Mall. Put it in downtown. Find a way to get it downtown. That's where it should be.
I don't know. I want it away from downtown and the Galleria. Can we put it where there's no traffic? So getting to the train won't be as hard. Hey, let's get to our moment of joy. Evan, what made you happy this week?
Oh, my moment of joy is that it is loquat season. If you have a loquat tree, those delicious little orange fruits are ready to be eaten. They taste like nature's sweet tarts. They are so delicious. And the past few seasons, we haven't had them either because freezes have killed them or we haven't had enough rain. But this year, finally, we're getting some good fruit. And I'm so excited. My kids love them. I'm using it to cook with. I want to make some loquat ice cream, loquat jam. You throw those in the oven and dry them out. Make dried loquats so tasty. Like, let's do this. Let's embrace what we've got here.
Nice. I love it. The loquat man. That's what I'm going to call you from now on. That's great. Did you hear our episode about gardening in Houston? We published it this week.
I did.
Yeah? That was for you, Evan.
Oh, thank you. You know, I was listening to y'all talk about tomatoes, putting them in. I got to say, if you're thinking about it now, it's too late.
Too late.
It's too late to do it. Look at what things go into soul food and southern food. Your okras, your sweet potatoes, your collard greens. Those are the things you can plant now. Do that.
All right. My moment of joy, and this is an easy one. Evan, it's Art Car Parade weekend. The festivities actually kicked off yesterday and the parade is Saturday. You can actually start seeing cars line up as early as 11 a.m., but the actual parade starts at 2 p.m. And if you want to see the full map, I've linked it in our show notes. It is one of the marquee events for our city. It just shows how funny, diverse, and unique we are as a city. It's so much fun. It's the best time of year. The weather's perfect. It's Art Car Parade weekend. So get out there, go support it, and just enjoy it. Take your kids. because their reactions to the cars, it's priceless. It's a beautiful weekend here, so let's get it done. But yeah, that is my moment of joy.
You know, the Art Car Museum is dead. Long live the Art Car Museum. It's wherever you see an art car.
Evan, that was a lot of fun, man. Thank you so much for joining us, and I will talk to you down the road.
See y'all next time.
That was Evan Mintz. All of the stories are linked in our show notes. That will do it for this week here on CityCast Houston. Our producers are Carleon Jones, Joyce Tang, and AK Al Momin. Our newsletter editor is Brooke Lewis, and the host is me, Raheel Ramzanali. Our music is by the band All the Kimonos. We'll be back on Monday with City Controller Chris Hollins to recap his first 100 days in office. Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something new. Our producers are Carleon Jones.